This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Firstly, how are you doing? Have you had any sleep?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yes, I did get some sleep. Of course, we were up during the night, this time at around 4 a.m. And also, we were kind of on alert just after midnight last night. So we were waiting for sirens because we'd been warned to stay near our safe rooms. Essentially, the Homefront Command have put in place a four-tier warning system now. Obviously, we have a little bit more time because the missiles are coming from further away. So we're not having to scramble within 20 seconds or within a minute or minute and a half to our shelter because we already know some 10 or 15 minutes before they actually arrive in Israel that the missiles are on the way either from Yemen or from Iran. And we actually received from both locations last night. So the four-tier system involves, first of all, a warning that says stay near your safe room. Then a very kind of loud and very interruptive noise that comes from your phone. I don't know where they found this noise, but I tell you, it wakes me up from the deepest sleep, which says, get ready, things are happening. You've got a few moments to plan. And I'm guessing that that's the moment that most people kind of run to the toilet and grab something to drink and scramble around looking for their last minute things that they need before the siren sounds. And then the fourth layer is an all clear signal once all the danger is over. And that's what's been implemented. Whereas during the period of the war in Gaza, we became quite used to just releasing ourselves after 10 minutes once we'd heard the explosions. We were told to wait 10 minutes and that was fine. Now we're being told to stay in our safe rooms until we get the all clear signal. And in some cases, we've stayed in our safe rooms for like an hour waiting for the all clear because there'd been more than one barrage fired during that period. And obviously, the Iranians are using a tactic to try to overwhelm our anti-missile systems. And they have a tendency to fire hundreds of missiles all at once and sometimes in different waves. So just when you think you've heard all the interceptions and you've got over the initial danger, they fire another wave to try and confuse our system and confuse us, I guess, in some sort of a way. So, yes, it's a different existence, no doubt about that. The danger is substantial, and we've seen that by virtue of the casualties that we've suffered. And so we are definitely in a different kind of state of this war right now. And in a weird sort of way, someone was describing our situation as a little bit like one of those Russian dolls, those babushkas, where we're in a war within a war, you know, and we just kind of, you know, we're on day 620 of the Gaza war, and our 53 hostages still remain in Gaza. And we are not allowed to forget about them or the work that's going on with Operation Swords of Iron and our soldiers in Gaza. We're also on day four of Operation Rising Lion, which is what the war, the operation against Iran has been labeled. In Hebrew, it's called Em Kelavi, Rising Lion. In fact, the literal translation of Am Kelavi, a people like a lion. And of course, that's a quote that's taken from the Tanakh, Operation Rising Lion. We're on day four of that. So we're in a war within a war. And it's very, very confusing to try to keep up, very overwhelming with all the information that we're being fed and very difficult to keep up with all the information that we're trying to understand as we go through this process.
And I think that there's also information that people might have that they're not allowed to share. So it also becomes, and I think that's been a little bit of a shift with this particular, episode, I don't know how else to put it, or in our new series. But there's I see a lot of requirements and responsibility about not sharing all the information that people have, which also changes things because we become so hungry for any form of information. And now this is telling us, hold on, we can't necessarily share some of it.
That's true. And I think that we don't really always know what we can and we cannot share. Obviously, everything that I'm telling you here is public knowledge and is available. And for example, I saw on TV this morning something which I was a little surprised to see, which is that damage was done to the U.S. consulate, the U.S. embassy in Tel Aviv, in the Iranian barrage that came last night, which I thought might have been something which wouldn't have been shared. I do know that during the process, during the time that we're going through the barrage, Israeli TV certainly has become much, much more careful about sharing information on the locations of the hits. But we do know, for example, that last night there were four or five locations which suffered significant hits. The one was Petah Tikva. Unfortunately, four people have been declared dead in the strike on the building in Petah Tikva. There was also a strike in Bnei Brak. One person was killed in the strike in Bnei Brak. His body was only discovered later this morning. There was a hit in Haifa area where we are still missing three people from that particular location in Haifa. We do know that there was a hit also in the area of Kiryat Gat, in the Lachish area, south of, in the southern part of Israel. And we also now hear that there was damage done to the U.S. embassy in Tel Aviv. So we can kind of put two and two together and we can understand where some of these locations have been, where hits have been suffered. And we also know that central Tel Aviv has been hit, and there's lots of speculation about how close to the defense military headquarters in Tel Aviv the attack came from from Friday night. We know that people have been killed in Bat Yam. We know that that Ramat Gan has been a certain place, a target for whatever reason. And whereas initially in the first night, and the last time I spoke to you, Howard, was on Friday, where I spoke about the operation that had been carried out overnight on Thursday into the early hours of Friday morning by Israel. And I called it legendary. And what we've learned since then about how they managed to do that has, in my view, made that operation even more legendary. But it was easy to talk in glowing terms because we hadn't yet received the response. And now we've had three nights of responses, and those responses have been unrelenting and have been extremely dangerous for all Israelis. And whereas on the first night I thought that the response that came back was really very focused on military targets in Israel, now I'm kind of not so sure. Because when a location in Rishon LeZion gets hit, when a location in Kiryat Gat gets hit, when locations like that are the targets, then I don't necessarily believe that they're attacking military sites or sites that might have some sort of security sensitivity approach to it. And so there is potentially here, from what I can see, an element of just not caring, just hitting whatever they can, whether it be civilian or military, whether it be justified or unjustified, in the context of the rules of war. And yet Israel continues to maintain very, very precise hits on military and government-related targets. And Israel's got a few prongs that they're using in Iran in terms of the way that they're attacking sites there. But civilian sites are really off targets, off limits, as far as Israel is concerned, even under the current circumstances.
So let's try and understand what is happening in Iran, because there's a tendency, which makes sense to look at what's happening in Israel. That's where, where we've seen quite dramatic footage. We can speak to people, but it's important, or equally as important, to understand what is actually happening in Iran. What do we know?
So even before we talk about Iran, I just do want to make one comment about what's happening in Israel. And our airspace is closed, and schools are closed, and businesses are closed, and people are trying to do the best that they can. But the resolve and the determination of the Israeli people is incredible to witness. It's really these moments that we live for, even though it's under such attack and under such siege and under such threat that we get from our enemies. But when we see how people are responding, and I can tell you that, you know, some 800 people almost have been made homeless, and the municipalities are coming along and they are rehousing those people, and people are coming around and bringing people to live with them in their homes. I personally know somebody whose home was destroyed on Friday night. I know that they received 3 phone calls from colleagues at their work to offer them to come and stay at their home overnight on Friday. They had no belongings and they had nothing left because their apartment had been destroyed. And people were calling them up right away to say, I think it's in your area, oh, it's your place, come and stay with us. Come right away, come now, come and stay with us. We will sort you out. People are just reaching out. The spirit of the people in this country is incredible, and I'd like to encourage people from abroad to try and see that as much as you can, because it is so encouraging to see how people have responded to this extremely difficult set of circumstances. Everybody just pulling together, doing whatever they can and supporting each other. I think that this is a moment of great victory for Israel and for the Jewish people in the way that they've responded to this. Now, let's talk about what's happening in Iran. I spoke on Friday about a 3-pronged attack, that being the leaders of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, military leaders, the second being military sites in Iran, and the third being the nuclear facilities. Those 3 prongs have continued, but in addition to that, there have been another 2 or 3 prongs added. The one prong that's been added is the targeting of Iranian regime sites. So the ministry buildings, the government offices, those kind of centers have also now been targeted, mostly in Tehran, but elsewhere around Iran as well. The other prong that's been added is airports. A number of Iranian airports across the country have been destroyed, disabling their ability to launch aircraft, not only civilian aircraft, but of course military aircraft more importantly, even though Iranian airspace is formally closed. The other prong that's been added more recently is against Iran's economy. Oil refineries, oil pipelines, because of course oil is the mainstay of the Iranian economy. So there have been a lot of attacks carried out against oil facilities in order to try to disable the economy. And of course, we shouldn't forget the attacks that have been carried out against nuclear scientists. We understand that more than 10 Iranian senior nuclear scientists have been targeted during the course of this war. So that's really the extent of which Israel has got intelligence information and the ability to reach in a very, very precise way the targets that they have chosen to target in order to somehow carry out the objectives of this war. And there is no stated objective anywhere that says Israel wishes to change the regime in Iran, although I think that that may well be welcome. But there is an interesting speculation about why Israel hasn't targeted the Iranian supreme leader Khamenei. And there was an article that I read that said that President Trump had vetoed carrying out attack against Khamenei. Apparently, as far as the Israelis are concerned, that wouldn't be a difficult thing to do. They know exactly where his shower is located, in which corner of which room of the house, and they would be able to get that quite easily. I think the problem for Israel and the reason why they've chosen not to carry out that attack is because we understand that Khamenei's son is lined up to take over from his father in the event that something might happen. And that would be a much, much potentially worse situation than the one that we have at the moment. Better the devil you know than you don't know, because the speculation is that Khamenei's son would be much more difficult and a much worse proposition than the fact that his father remains in power at the moment. So that really kind of summarizes what Israel has been up to. They've also adopted the strategy of clearing the skies for Israeli planes to be able to operate in the skies above Iran. The initial attacks on Thursday night, early hours of Friday morning, were apparently carried out from outside of Iranian airspace, so Iraqi airspace and the areas around that, in order to first of all disable the anti-aircraft systems. And slowly but surely, Israel has managed to kill those anti-aircraft systems off, to the point that Israeli aircraft are now free to operate in the skies above Iran quite freely. And we heard yesterday that for the very first time in Israel's history, a target that is 2,300 kilometers away from Israel was attacked on the eastern side of Iran and successfully disabled a military facility in that area of Iran. And Israeli pilots have all returned safely to base. And I think that those are really important facts. So Israel has freedom of movement over the skies of Iran. They are currently attacking significantly the ballistic missile storage facilities, the ballistic missile launches, in order to somehow try to alleviate the pressure that Israelis feel with these nightly attacks that we are experiencing. Hopefully, within not too in a period that won't take too long, that we'll somehow be able to disable Iran's ability to fire towards us. But I should warn listeners, we've all been warned that this war can take weeks. So we are all kind of lined up at the moment. Apparently, the latest estimates are that the airport probably won't reopen for another week or longer.
Wow.
And that this war could continue for 2 or 3 more weeks, and perhaps even more than that. So we really need to be ready to continue this in the longer term.
Quite sobering thoughts there, Anthony Wright. Thank you as always. It is important to know that and to make sure that we understand how long this can potentially go on for. It is about to go 8 o'clock. That was Anthony Wright with the Israel Report. You can catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.